We on? Now then, Ray Winston here. The real one. Close enough. Doing a new podcast with me mate Tony. Soprano, that is.
Oh, how you doing?
Talking all the big stuff. Birds, scraps, films.
And of course, men's mental health. With studio guests such as arch feminist and top broad Deborah Francis White and disgraced scumbag comedian Dapper Laughs.
Something for everyone. We're trying to be better men, ain't we, Tone?
That's right. We're bad boys done good.
Available on YouTube and to download on all good audio platforms. Go on, get off your hands, you dopey c***.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Rich Wilson, and I talk to funny and interesting people about their experiences with men's mental health.
Insane in the membrane.
This week, we're in a social area up at Comedy Central, lounging about on a sofa, having a chat to Rhys James, a very confident, very funny young man. I've got to be honest, the sofa's threw me a little bit, very comfortable, and I've only got little legs, so it was difficult to sort of get a grip, but we got there, and Rhys was excellent company, as you'll hear. So, tuck in.
Well, a lot of men's behaviour comes out of the fact that we couldn't have a fucking conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have to, you know, you don't have to, but some world famous comedians have to invite female comedians on tour and then wank in front of them just because they couldn't tell
they
have to. Because they couldn't tell their dad that they wish
because they loved them
that they could have a hug. Yeah. Oh, fine.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, now you've explained it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Carry on.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So that's what it is. And so are we. We're all on, aren't we?
Yeah, we're all on.
We're on.
I stick this on me. I try not to say anything, but occasionally.
I bring him in.
Right, all right.
I think it adds against my will.
It always makes it more legit.
There's always nice to have a producer presence on a podcast that's often referred to.
Mum being in the background.
Well, it makes it more legitimate.
Yeah, just like also it just changes the way you perceive the whole thing rather than just Rich is wandering around with a mic in his hand going like
just talking to comedians
gesturing with it
come and talk to me like
a newsreader cornering them in gigs. It's like no I've had to get someone involved it's been organised. We booked a time
This wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Paul. This would just be again a bunch of recordings on a laptop.
Yeah,
you know, so I've got Jade and Paul to thank for that, and
Or to blame. Yeah.
There's a lot to answer for, Paul. For making me do actual work, which is good because it actually fires you up to write new material, and because you're doing this, so you feel positive. Do you know what I mean? Because you're doing something that fires you up. You kind of it makes you instead of just sitting back and just relying on the 20 that you've been doing for the last.
Yeah. It drives me absolutely mad that.
Yeah.
I get in. That is the cause of every rut. Like, actually, even life rut has been, I'm doing the same stuff and I need to stop. Yes. And the only way I've ever got out of it is new material. Yeah. Every time.
This is it. Alan, when did we meet? About 10 years ago in Tring, was it Tring?
Yes, and actually, do you know what? I'm amazed that you remember that. Because I associate you with me starting out in comedy.
Oh wow.
So, but I don't look at you and go, it reminds me of Rhys James' first gig. You're one of the first people I met. That was a very, very early gig for me.
Yeah.
And I couldn't remember, it was when we said I was gonna come and do this podcast, I kept thinking, That's what I associated with, but I kept thinking, I can't remember specifically
yes.
what the gig was. So I searched your name in my email inbox and I found it yesterday.
Right. Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, fucking, it was Tring. And it was the Roving Comedians comedy thing where like you and two other acts, I think Henning Venn.
And Ben Norris.
And Ben Norris.
That's right, yeah.
Rotated, there was three gigs on at once.
Three gigs, and then there was three MCs.
Yeah, me and Matt Richardson.
That's right.
And a man who has since quit stand-up called Alex Clissold Jones.
Oh, blimey.
I don't think he does stand-up anymore. And if he does that, I'm really sorry. That's so mean. Yeah.
He's probably doing a tour somewhere.
Yeah. yeah. He's huge in LA, weirdly. We hosted, and that's I'd never emceed before, and I've barely emceed since.
Oh, wow.
It was really fun.
It was. It was in a pub garden.
Yeah, the one I was doing was
in
outdoors.
In the sunshine.
Yeah. It was like a barbecue outside in a pub garden, and the stage was like essentially on a trap door.
But it
felt like someone was going to pull a lever if you were not funny and you weren't going to disappear. Yeah.
Old school.
So I started, I was at Tring because I grew up in Hertfordshire. Mm. And I literally got the gig because Matt Richardson said, oh, Reese lives near there.
Right, yeah.
And the guy went, oh, okay. Well, I need someone to compare this gig, presumably for free. So then I was like, great, stage time. Little did I know there was not a stage. And it was far too much time, yeah.
Oh, yeah, did you have to fill in if the comic was running late?
Yeah. So it was just like, and I'd never compared before in my life. And to be honest, even doing a set, I had like 6 minutes. It's such a useful thing. If you are a new comic, fucking compare a gig, because you have no choice but to be fearless. No, you have to just be like, oh, right.
Yeah.
I've got nothing to say. So.
Especially like that in the deep end as well. You've got a pad for time.
Yeah.
I mean, I've said that before. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm Ben Kenobi when new acts come along. I've got any advice. But what I do say is, if you can MC anywhere, like you've just said, do it, because it toughens you up and it teaches you to come out of your 20. If something happens, you're able to come out of your material.
And what's very typical of me and the way I've behaved throughout my life is that that moment where we did that gig and I realised, oh, comparing, that's the way to actually become an organic and good comedian because of this coming out of your 20 and being fearless. I then basically never compared again, even though I pretty much said those words out loud to myself. If you want to be a good comedian, compare. I just went, you know what? I'm going to do this the hard way. And I never did again, which is what I have done my whole life, is I've identified the exact thing I need to do. And then I've actively not done it because I'm a lazy piece of shit.
Is that what it is? Or do you think
I'm lazy and scared. That's the lazy. Lazy and scared.
Has that always been a problem for you? Like you say, all the way through your life?
All the time I do stuff like that and I just go, right, well, it's simple. All you need to do is this. All you need to do is get up at 6 a.m. and then go and go for a run and then do this. And you know what? The night before, I am going to do that every time. And then obviously wake up and go, well, of course not. I'm me, remember? I'm a different person to last night. This is a new day, Reese.
Now I feel good.
Which is
good,
true of like everyone. But it was like, it was the same all through school, all through university. It was just like, well, all you need to do is just work to this degree. Not even like work insanely hard. Just work to this degree and you'll be fine. And just like, oh, right, I still didn't.
It
worked out fine. It worked out fine. It was just like, the amount of conversations I would have with like, that work with like heads of year and my parents of like not living up to potential, and I was like, well, get fucking used to it, because that's my middle name.
That's on you.
And now when I don't live up to potential in comedy, I'm just like, well, of course, I'm the guy. This is the thing. This is what I do. This is my act. That's why I like to open my sets really strong and then just peter out for 20 minutes. Just go, I know, we all thought this was going to be great, didn't we, at the start? I had those 2 one-liners and then...
And then that was it.
That was it.
So there's no disappointment.
Yeah.
That's what it is. You're running from disappointment.
Yeah, exactly.
But you've had a good childhood, a good life. From all that, I'm not being asked to do anything.
That's too vague a question, I'd say, Rid.
Was it? Yeah, this is the thing, I'm not Paxman, so.
Have you had a good life?
Had a good life, mate?
You know what? I'd actually love Paxman to ask that to an MP.
Can you imagine that?
They're talking.
Yeah, what's your problem? Yeah. What was your life like before
They're talking about legislation, quite a lot of detail, and then just, rather than pressing him going, give me an answer, he just goes, have you had a good life?
Yeah.
And then just see them blindsided by that, going, well, oh, good point, good question. Oxbridge was good. I suppose I had a good childhood. I mean, I had a kidney removed when I was 10 years old.
Did you?
Yeah.
What happened there?
Well, my kidney died.
Right, okay.
It collapsed.
And just took it away.
And then they said, I was about 8 years old, pissed blood, and was like, Mum, is this puberty?
Yeah, I was
like, this isn't normal. And also, it wasn't just, it was like it actually painful.
Yeah, right.
So then I was like, well, this is urgent.
Yeah.
This is what a precocious 8-year-old I was. Mum, there's an urgent matter to do with my penis right now that needs to be addressed. So we...
because you're so vague with everything else, like doing the bare minimum.
Yeah. We'll do it tomorrow. Yeah, I'll get around to it this afternoon.
We got the other one.
Yeah. So then I was like, we went to the doctor. They were like, yeah, you're fucked, mate. Basically what happened is that one of the kidneys had just like shriveled up and was now doing 20% of the work or something.
Wow.
When it's meant to be obviously 50. Yes, but because it was only doing 20, the other one wasn't... Because it was still there, the other one wasn't going up and then doing 80.
Was it taking over?
It was still doing 50.
Right.
So then they were like, look, you don't have to have it removed, but if you want, we will. And I was like, well, I do, because I'm going to get weeks off school. And it is causing me agony. We first realised actually when I was staying at my friend James's house and I was just bedridden, like writhing in pain.
Right.
Because my parents had gone to a James Taylor concert, which they would do all the time. The only concert I remember my parents ever going to when I was a kid was James Taylor. They love James Taylor.
The American singer.
I love James Taylor as well. Yeah, but like I wasn't, when they were there, I was like, I'm dying.
Right, yeah.
James Taylor. Yeah, I've seen Fire and Rain and I've seen blood coming out of my dick. I don't remember them rushing home. I don't remember. I seem to be like,
sorry, we got trapped in the car park.
It's going to be like 3 hours, I think. When does it end? Yeah. You just get into You've Got a Friend, so I think we're going to leave it. And then, had it removed.
Wow. And then what happened? Was it?
Well, I was fine. I was absolutely fine. Yeah. I mean, it hasn't affected me at all. I mean, obviously, you're looking at me, and I do look ill. I've always looked a bit ill.
I don't know about that. I don't know.
I'm just like a pale, like weed, dweeb. But I didn't drink alcohol for ages. So like when everyone was like 14, 15 and they were drinking alcohol, I was always saying, no, I don't drink. But the actual reason I was doing that is because my best friend, a very cool man, probably the most popular boy in school.
Right.
By which I mean the self... proclaimed most popular boy in school. You know how the popular kids at school, like, everyone actually fucking hates? So like he was like, somehow would be considered like the king of the school, but everyone hates the main jock, right?
Yeah.
So he was basically that, and he played football for Cambridge or Peterborough.
Right.
And he didn't drink because he was taking that seriously. And so I was like, yeah, I don't drink either. And then I was suddenly needed a reason so as not to be like, I'm copying him. So I've only got one kidney. And I was like, well, that is a more valid reason, actually.
Yeah,
than,
man.
Oh, I play for Cambridge. Fuck off, mate. I've got one kidney. But it was... people sort of figured it out, given that I was this guy's shadow. I mean, I was doing everything this guy did, except being good at football.
And it reckons he's lost a kidney.
Yeah.
A lot of bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. So it was
just
like,
copying Clive.
Yeah.
Whatever his name was.
Yeah. Yeah, his name is Luke. I don't mind it.
There you go.
Being out there. I've said loads of stuff about him publicly before. His name is Luke. He now promotes a nightclub.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Champion.
Yeah, it's a classic. It's the classic footballer journey, isn't it? David Bentley and my mate Luke. Those are the classics. I know that you're not into football, so that probably meant very little to you what I just said.
But there's a lot of talking about toxic masculinity and, you know, like the, and, you know, mental health, and it's everywhere now. I feel it's getting to a point that the words mental health are getting banded around maybe too much. Like, we touched on this the other night when we had a brief chat.
Yeah.
And there are people that genuinely suffer with their mental health, and they can't even function in everyday life. But going up the shops becomes a major deal. Yet sometimes I feel, and we had a brief chat the other day.
Yeah.
That maybe some people are, especially in this industry, they jump on buzzwords.
Yeah, it's a little bit of Yeah, it's hard to know, because obviously mental health exists in different degrees all the time, but there's people who use it as a bit of a badge of honour, I think. It's an angle, isn't it? Everyone's constantly looking for an angle. The thing specifically that I would refer to is, I think there's a lot of people who use the word anxiety wrong.
Mm.
And I think there's a difference between anxiety and anxiousness.
Yes.
Because of course you feel anxious. Like, there's blurbs I've read that are like, God, with all this Trump stuff, my anxiety is through the roof. And you go, yeah.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
That's a human reaction to some bad news.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's not... I don't perceive it as anxiety. And there are people, for whom things like Trump should make them nervous because he specifically targets certain demographics.
Yes, yes.
Right,
yes.
So fair enough.
Yeah.
But then like when people are just like, God, isn't the world so messed up and it's sending my anxiety crazy? You go, yeah, but that's just normal anxiousness. That's being nervous. Or people who just like say they suffer from, oh God, yeah, well, I've got really bad anxiety because just before I go on stage, I feel for scared. You go, yeah, because you're about to do something you shouldn't do. It's like that's such an instinctive reaction. It's called being nervous. I mean, like, it's your body saying, this is a risk, don't do it.
Yeah.
And often you shouldn't, because, like, I had a conversation with my mum about it.
Yeah.
This was a couple of years ago, and I'd had, like, a month where I was just, like, going a bit mad in my head. And I was just, like, chatting to my mum about it, and she said, well, does it feel like this? And I know that all anxiety feels different, but then she basically just described.
Right.
And she just, like, became a different person. She's like suddenly monologued this description of what happens in her head.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit, no, I do not have anxiety. I mean, that's some serious shit. And mine is just, oh, I'm sad today.
It's definitely.
And I was like, there are different levels and stuff. But I just think. Also, I'm a big believer in show don't tell. So if you're doing art about something and you want us to know that you suffer from anxiety, just like if you want us to know that you're a bit of a geek, then just like we should know that. You shouldn't,
we'll be able to see why,
you didn't have to say the phrase, oh, well, I'm a geek, so because I do this. You just, we should know that you're a geek because the act. So
because you're dressed as Spock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you're on stage doing stand-up, so you're not cool.
It's actually, I was talking to Paul Pirie and I was saying to him a couple of weeks ago, and I'm saying, I was like, mate, I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that, I'm feeling on edge, I can't calm down, I'm worried about everything. And he's like, yeah, that's anxiety. And I'm like, but I didn't realise that's what it was.
Well, that's another thing that this conversation might highlight.
Yeah.
Because I've had similar conversations like that. Mm. What we might be doing, so what I might be doing.
Yeah.
By saying, no, people are using it wrong. You're saying it's anxiety when it's not. It's just it's just normal.
Yeah.
That might be being a man. So it might be being like, no, it's not anxiety. I don't suffer from anxiety. I'm not asking for directions.
Yeah.
I don't suffer from anxiety. This is just what it's like to be a person. And then you just realise, oh, actually, that's not necessarily true. Yeah. So this might be the case. I still think, I think people, not intentionally, what I'm trying to say is I don't think it's intentional. I think most of the time it's not a vindictive, well, I'm going to get some mental health points. I just think people have heard this, going, yeah, it's probably that. And they just use it to just do it. And then you just go, no, there are people who seriously have this.
Yeah. My brother's 45, still lives at home with my mum and dad. And he can't be in crowds. Like we went to Toby Carvery. I know, I'm just showing off now.
All right, mate. Fucking hell.
All right, we've all been out, mate. and he freaked out. I had to take him home. He just cannot function. And when we were growing up, they called it social phobia.
Well, has he had it his whole life?
Yeah. And that becomes debilitating for him, you know. And they reckon he might be a little bit autistic. But it's undiagnosed. There's all these other things going on. That he works in as caretaker in a special needs school, and he lives at home with mum and dad, and you know, but he's got it just right, and he feels safe in that environment. But if you take him out of it, he freaks out, that's proper mental health issues.
I've got a mate who developed that,
right?
I think at university.
Okay,
and was like a very social mates through childhood, was extremely social, extremely loud, like. Good at sport, which is obviously the most helpful thing when you're at school, and then just like dropped out of uni and is now just lives at home and just can't.
Wow.
And just like, how does that?
Yeah.
How does that emerge? How does that come about? How is it not a chemical thing that you start with?
It's weird. There's so much going on subconsciously that we don't understand. That. Yeah, it's hard, man.
It's horrible. Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. So you got into comedy.
Yeah.
Did you always want to be a comedian?
Yeah. Well, here's the sort of affluent area I went to.
Go on.
I always wanted to be, from like 13, I think, I was like, I want to do stand-up comedy.
Right.
No one young was famous
No.
as a stand-up comedian at that time. So when I was watching comedy on telly, it was Jack D and Joe Brand, were the fame, right, yeah. like the really famous comedians. And I just thought, oh, I want to be a comedian, but you have to be 40. Yeah. So I genuinely thought at 13, so until then, I'll probably just go into advertising or something. That's the sort of fucking area, because I was like, it's a creative outlet, but it's realistic. That's the sort of fucking upbringing I had. And then
you sound very put together, very well put together.
Yeah, I know. And that, but that's why people now suspect me of being a murderer. So, you know, like, I've got a vibe where people, like, when I did that show, Roast Battle.
Yeah.
And when we were doing it, we were just stood, like, in the green room, and Felicity Ward said, what do you think of this joke? I'm about to do this joke against Reese Nicholson.
Right, yeah.
What do you think of this joke? Because you told me this extremely dark joke. And I basically didn't react. And I just went, yeah, great, that's really funny. And then 10 minutes later, she came back and said, Reese, I've said that joke to a few other people. And some people have, like, they mostly express concern that it might be too offensive. And I suddenly realised that you're the absolute worst person to ask because you don't feel emotions. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she was like, you don't have empathy and you don't. And so I don't know why. You basically haven't blinked since I've met you. I don't know why I should have asked you. And I was just like, yeah, well, you're on fucking Roast Battle, so where else are you going to do it? And then she was, and also Felicity Ward is like a big, like, mental health person who talks about anxiety in her shows and stuff, and said on that, and I think it was even in the edit, said, like, this is really off brand for me. But she still did the fucking joke, and it was great, and it went well.
So you were right.
It was about Hitler. It was great stuff. Yeah, so I was right. But I was like, it doesn't, you can't apply that to anything else. The whole, like, being an emotionless fucking weird. But yeah,
said to you before.
But that's the sort of, like, the sort of child who thinks, well, I want to be a comedian, but logically I will go into advertising, is exactly the sort of person who grows up to not care if you do an insanely offensive joke. But yeah, I basically, what happened is I got to 17 and then Jack Whitehall got famous.
Right.
I was like, well, he is so young.
Yes.
And he was like 19 when he was famous. He was presenting Big Brother.
That's right,
Big Brother's Big Mouth or whatever it was called by then. And I was a fan of when Russell Brand presented that show, so I watched it. And I was a fan of Jack. And then I was like, oh, fuck it. And actually, I remember I'd emailed in Luton. There's a venue called The Hat Factory.
Yes.
And I'd emailed them saying, can I come and do comedy at your venue?
Yeah.
It's really near my house. It's local to me. It's the nearest place to do comedy. And then they were like, oh, we don't do it anymore. And then 6 months later, I got an email from them saying, we're doing an open mic night. Do you want to come and do comedy? And I literally showed the email to my mum at 17 and said, well, I guess I've got to stop making excuses and just do it. And I was like, at 17. I think back to that. I think, I hadn't made any excuses. What excuses was I referring to?
Your mum just must look at you going,
she was like, yeah, do what you want. I don't fucking care. And then I went and did it. And I was really one-linery. I was really like, really Jimmy Carr.
Right.
Those sorts of gags.
Yeah.
And I did like 8 minutes, which is quite a long time for
that's a long
gig,
time.
But
yeah,
I just like did every joke I'd ever written.
Right.
And got away with it. But yeah, that's why I did it. Jack Whitehall is to blame for me starting. Because it was just like, oh, you can do this young. Because he's now the most exciting, like most talked about comedian in the country.
Yeah, man.
And
you're right as well, because it was
like,
it didn't even occur to me until, I didn't start till I was in my 30s, I was 32. And even then it was because someone said, oh, you can make money from doing this. And I was like, really? Yeah. And they gave me a gig and then it went all right. And then it kind of just went from that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was no plan. I certainly wouldn't have said, I wouldn't even dream of saying something like that to my mum and dad.
It's so characteristic, though. It's like all these things, when I think back to them.
Yeah.
Like in interviews, you get asked about first gig and stuff. You didn't ask me that, I just said it. But when you think back to like what led up to it and saying things like that, saying the thing like the advertising thing, saying the thing like, I've got to stop making excuses. It's just so fucking characteristic of my dead-eyed,
I can imagine when you were
non-blinking,
born,
weird. Yeah,
you just came out and just went, morning.
Yeah. Just clap my hands.
What are we doing?
Right. Yeah.
I better stop making excuses.
Yeah.
Get on. What is this fucking thing you've given birth to?
That's so funny. My first words were, right, I guess I've got to stop making excuses and start talking, have I?
Better stop fucking about. Towel.
Right, those 2 years have been a waste of time. Come on. Give me a pen and paper. haven't I got a tax return to do or something? Yeah.
You're like the original Stewie Griffin.
Yeah, that's the act, isn't it? That's the whole thing.
Has it been commented on before about you being an emotionless robot?
No, I think it's got more. I think it's become
more. You just come to that conclusion on your own. And,
yeah.
Well, clearly.
It's been commented on. It has been commented on before, people saying, yeah, just like, I wrote this line, I've done it on stage a couple of times, it's so fucking, it feels like I need to do finger guns after it.
Always room for finger guns.
It's
man.
Just a bit like lip bitey, like line. I don't know how to explain. I don't know the word to use. It just feels a bit. Ugh. But it works in the context. But the sentence is: people say I lack empathy. I don't see where they're coming from. Right. It's just really. It's just like it seems like it's on a fucking postcard. That joke. but I was just yeah. And also like my show this year is called Snitch because I've just got another line where I just say. I've got the demeanour of a prison snitch, which is basically the whole. It is my demeanour on and off stage. It's just like I just seem like a little shit.
Randall, is it Randall?
Yeah. It's just like
From Recess.
Yeah. What it actually was is just like I'm the sort of guy. I think it comes across. I'm the sort of guy who like was next to the bully.
Yeah, you're the side of yard. Yeah, go on, get him.
And I wasn't, but it definitely seems like I was. And I also just like I wasn't not that. You know what I mean?
Right,
it's like
right.
Because I was doing anything, I was small, I was tiny.
Yeah.
I was definitely like one of the small boys. I was really short and it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Like it affected me a lot and there was a lot of conversations about it in my family and stuff.
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah. So
well, like you were stunted.
They told, yeah, but I wasn't. There were obviously like three of us in the year that were like that, like there are all the time.
Mm.
But I was like affected by it massively.
Yeah.
And there are pictures of me where it's like, I literally look 10 years younger than my mates when I was like 15, it's insane. And I was told years later by my parents that my mum had talked about like, maybe like getting some hormones or something.
Oh, wow.
But my dad was like, no, I was like that. Just don't worry about
it. You'll have a spurt.
Yeah, and I mean, someday. my dad was like the smallest by miles in his like age group.
Okay.
And then he went to uni at 16 because he was in Australia and they're all fucking thick at the time. They were just like, you're too smart. And he's not that smart.
Right.
I take back saying they're all thick.
Yeah, I do apologise. Anyway, this is in Australia.
I take that back. What I mean is, those are his words. And his address
you're
is...
You're quoting. Yeah.
No, he...
Yeah.
They basically said, you're too smart to go to uni. So he went to uni at 16 and he was on the football team and stuff. So he was already small for his group of 16 girls. And then he was at uni.
Yeah.
People were just like, what is this? And he was like great at cricket and football.
He was just walking around.
So people
just...
were just like, who, what has happened? That is
they have
not.
They have a bowl hat and he was
Yeah.
Briefcase.
That is not true to my experience. it was not like, oh yeah, he's tiny, but he's the best at everything. It was like, he's tiny and he wants to put on these series of plays. Does anyone want to go see that? No, let's just leave him. We'll just say we were there.
That he's written a ray gun this time.
Yeah. That was more my vibe.
So, mind you, that must be, well, you just said that you had, you know, you were feeling a little bit out of sorts recently.
Yeah.
So it must have been, from what you've been telling me now, that now you've explained it a bit more, that must have felt so unusual. If you're not saying you're disconnected, but you're, you know, emotionally, you kind of just go, it doesn't matter. It's all, well, I'll just do this.
Yeah,
it was
more like, when I came back from university, I lived at home. I lived with my parents for a year and a half.
Yeah.
Obviously trying to do comedy full time.
Right.
And I'm really grateful to, like my family are so, I've always been so open.
Yeah.
There's so many, I think it's quite rare, maybe not for my generation, but definitely like if I speak to comics, people don't know what I'm talking about.
Right.
But I've always felt like, oh, we could talk about anything.
Yeah, okay.
So we did. So like when I lived at home, when I was like, what would I have been, 21, 22?
Oh, yeah.
Me and my mum would just like have long conversations that were like had emotional depth to them.
Wow.
And it was like actual conversation. And it was just always just like, yeah, anyway, night.
Wow.
It was never like, it wasn't emotional. It was just like, yeah, it's weird, isn't it? How sometimes you feel like this and then da da da. And then like,
holy
for
shit.
Me, it's this. Yeah, and then it'd be like, oh, right. So the reason I didn't have those moments alone is, I think, because I've already said all that.
I've already
done all that.
That is incredible.
And because, but I was also a teenager who was like writing poetry and like,
right,
you know.
Yeah, we're getting to it now.
I was getting all this shit out early doors. I was like writing, I used to enter short story competitions when I was 11 on the internet.
Fuck's sake.
Yeah, I'm an absolute prick. I'm the worst. These were not good. I didn't win. I want to clarify, I'm not like, I was such a talent when I was 11. I used to, no, I just used to be a completely deluded little, I just used to love. For ages, I tried everything. So I was like, I used to draw all the time and I was fucking shit. And I used to write all these poems and like stories and stuff. And I used to like try every sport because I just knew there's something I need to do that I can actually dedicate myself to.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is. And I used to like, I used to do like amateur dramatics and
what?
Shit. I played Oliver. I did one play. I played Oliver. But the play was Two Gentlemen of Verona. No, it was Oliver. it was Oliver.
See, this is what I'm talking about. You've gone through your life, you just sort of fall into these. You got Oliver when I was.
Yeah, but only because I was the smallest one there.
Yeah.
I wasn't the best actor. There was no talent on display in the whole play because we're all at fucking amateur dramatics.
It was to fit the bill.
It was absolutely abysmal. Yeah, I just looked like Oliver. So they were like, right, well, it's obviously you, isn't it? So the other small boy there was Indian. So they were like, Rhys, you're Oliver.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, there was just shit like that. And then that was why it was, I know I was only 17, so it sounds insane. And I'm really grateful to the idea of like, knowing what you wanted to do early and then doing it.
Yes.
Because I've had conversations with my mum where she's like, well, you know, I'm 62 and I still don't know what I want to do.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that is my worst nightmare. Not that doesn't change, because sometimes you just like have a couple of months in stand-up where you just go, I think I might have been wrong.
Yeah.
And you just go, all right, well, what's the fucking point?
Yeah, well, mate, I'm 14 years in and you get you get a few weeks where the gigs aren't flying. And and it happens to everybody, and then suddenly it lifts off again and you're fine.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
But the only play I was ever in at school was the story of Admiral Nelson.
Great.
And I think they even invented a part. We played, there was three of us, and we were sugarcane cutters on an island that he visited. And yes, we did blackface. They did it. I remember it to this day.
Oh my God.
They did it to us, and we had to come out singing this song. We sang a song. And we were sugarcane cutters, and it was.
How did it go down?
Well, it was the most horrifying thing. Yeah, it's in this small town in Kent, and they loved it.
Fucking
hell, man! So that's my
that's nuts.
Put me off forever.
Yeah, that's mad.
Yeah, so that was the only sort of play I was ever in, and it put me off performing.
And you'd think you'd have learned from that, but I saw your last Edinburgh show, and there you were.
I know. The songs are something else, aren't they? It's like Jim Davis and Never Went Away.
Oh, God. I the next time I went back to Tring, I was on doing an Edinburgh preview, doubleheader with Jim Davidson.
No.
Yeah. And I had to go on second.
After Jim Davidson?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So they phoned me the day before.
No, just to say to you, but it's,
Yeah. No, feel free to disrespect me. No, of course not. I can't feel a thing. So I went, they phoned me the day before the thing and said, just to let you know, all of these are double headers. Mm. It was the most I'd ever been paid for comedy at the time, I think.
Right.
Or at least for a preview. Yeah. And it was a preview to like 300 people. So I was like,
amazing.
Well, I want to do it.
Yeah.
It was for my debut show. And they said, the other act is Jim Davidson. It's sold out. And he also wants to go on first because he has to leave and go to a charity gig. And I was
shit, of course he doesn't.
And I was like, fine. And I got there and I did it. I didn't even meet him because he spent the whole time before his show out in the foyer shaking everyone's hand to meet them before he went on. And he went off the stage immediately outside onto a moped and disappeared, onto the back of a moped and disappeared. And then I went on and I opened with to a crowd who, by the way, have just given the first standing ovation in Tring history.
Oh my God.
It's the Tringe Festival, it's called. And promoter came backstage and was like, that was fucking amazing. They've never given a standing ovation before in their life.
Oh, that's what you want
to
hear.
It was incredible. We've been doing this festival for 4 years. They've never done that before. And I was like, okay. and I was thinking, well, my show opens with genuinely a 3-minute spoken word poem. But let's have a go, shall we? But I went on and I said, just like get a bit, I thought, God, get a bit of a laugh. Just say, oh, I hope you enjoyed my support act. Little bit of a laugh.
Nice.
And then I said, I got so confident from the laugh at that one joke that I said to an audience of people who have just given a standing ovation to Jim Davidson, I said, Jim Davidson had to go on first because he's got to go off to a charity gig. I don't do a lot of charity gigs, but then again, my conscience is clear.
Wow.
And I mean, it was like, there was like 6 people clapped. Like, yes. And then those are the people who'd come to see me. It quickly transpired.
Was it mom, dad?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And then everyone else was like, what do you mean? And I was like, anyway, I'll just start. This is a poem called, and fuck me. I mean, I got away with it.
Yeah, right.
But it was like,
holy shit.
But I just was like, I thought of that line while I was watching him. And I thought, I've got to say it now.
Mate.
I have to say it.
Such
now.
A good line.
That yeah, was, I know. Yeah, and I was great. Like, even as I said it, I thought, if I'd have been a few years more advanced,
yeah.
I would have said after it, look, I know in the context you're never going to have laughed at that, but that is fucking funny. I mean, that's and also imagine being me and thinking I've got to say it. Imagine being me now having said it. I would have done all of that stuff and like talked about it for ages, but because it was like, oh God, move on. I didn't know what to do. It was my first show, so I was just like, oh,
yeah.
I don't know how to do an hour. But I wish I'd done that, and I wish that happened now. Although if it happened now, I probably wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have done the gig.
Well, people are going to listen to this.
Yeah, 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 exactly. At least I can get it out.
What a legend.
Yeah, I had to tell the anecdote because I had to get it out. But
it's such a good story.
I can't believe I didn't. And then afterwards, someone tweeted me.
Right.
Just tweeted me directly saying, thanks for being current, relevant, and not sexist and racist. Unlike someone else who was on tonight.
Wow.
Didn't even put his name. And Jim Davidson, within 10 minutes, had found this and sent it to his followers saying, look at this fucking prick, I've got a standing ovation tonight.
Wow.
And it was like, have you found that? No one had tagged him in it. No one even put his name.
Maybe he put into Twitter, racist, homophobic.
Yeah.
Oh, that's me.
He searches racist and sexist and then he just goes, hang on. Yeah.
He's going to listen to this.
Get a tweet.
So, Jim, if you're listening, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. But to tell you what, his show, the middle 20 minutes was absolutely fucking electrifyingly good.
Well, this is what I've heard about him. He's actually
amazing.
A nice guy.
Amazing. The middle 20 minutes. So he opened with just really hack. It was just really boring and hack stuff.
Right,
the first 20 and closing 20. And it was pretty homophobic, sexist and racist.
Right.
But the middle 20, he was literally talking about the feeling he got in his gut when he was wrongly accused in Operation U-Tree.
Oh, wow, yeah,
about the feeling in his stomach.
Yeah.
Like, for a comedian like him who does the sort of stuff he does, to talk about that is like, fucking hell.
Amazing.
And what was interesting about it, it's he was in an area like Tring, which is like quite a posh, savvy area.
Yep.
And that bit did way worse.
Really?
Yeah. And it was a brilliant stand-up. Yeah. So funny, so interesting, like,
wow,
depth
man.
To it.
That's what I'm glad that you brought that up, because there was a couple of people in that U-Tree thing that hadn't done anything.
Mm.
And because they were around that time, they all sort of got sort of dragged into it.
Yeah.
That must have been horrific.
Yeah.
To have to go through that because straight away people just go, oh, there's no smoke without fire. They've been mentioned, so they clearly did something. You know, like Freddie Starr and people like that. That must have been
horrifying. That's why it's like, there's a constant like niggling, I mean, not for everyone, but there's a niggling pursuit of like, when you're writing a new show, of like, oh, I just really don't want other people to also be talking about this.
Right.
So whenever you pick a thing, if you think, oh, I've not heard someone talk about this before, so I'm going to go and talk about this, it feels so much better than if you've just got a really good bit, but it's about a topic that other people have talked about.
Yeah.
For me, anyway, and I think for a lot of comics, especially when you're going to Edinburgh and you know you're going to be scrutinised in a different light. On tour, it's different, and in gigs, it's different. But when you know, like, no, I'm actively asking people to review this, then they have every right to say, look, I've been to 8 shows and everyone's saying this, so this isn't original. But that's why there must have been a little bit of Jim Davidson that was like, well, no one's going to fucking Edinburgh and talking about being accused of being a paedophile, are they? In Operation U-Tree, a bit of him going, jackpot. I've got my big close-up. But
yeah.
I was like, well, you must just be like that's why it was so exciting to watch, because like, I've never seen anything like this.
No.
Never seen anyone come close to talking about anything like that.
Yeah.
That bit, that routine is amazing. Was amazing, as I remember it.
I remember seeing, it's a famous interview now, you'll see it on YouTube, with Matthew Kelly being interviewed by Frank Skinner. Because when Matthew Kelly was accused of child abuse, or whatever it was, and Frank Skinner had made jokes about it, and then so then being in the interview and you see Matthew Kelly, I love Frank Skinner, but Matthew Kelly really shrinks
that son.
He's like, you know what you said, and it was, and you know it was wrong to say it. Look at the interview on YouTube.
Wow.
And Matthew Kelly does not do.
And Frank. And Frank Skinner just is like,
Frank's like. Like he's still being Frank Skinner. He's still trying to keep it light, but Matthew Kelly, man.
Wow.
Yeah. It's fucking sinister. He's like,
wow.
Yeah, you know what you said.
There's an amazing interview. There's an amazing Parkinson interview with Woody Allen.
Right.
At like the height of the original.
Yeah.
Woody Allen allegations. Right. Are we still calling them allegations?
Oh man.
but they, and he keeps asking him about it, and then Woody Allen's just being like, yeah, I just don't
want to.
We're not discussing this. It's a legal matter. So, and then there's just a bit where he just goes, you know, you have a morbid curiosity here. And then Parkinson's just like, no, I'm an interviewer. I'm not curious. I didn't invite these people here because I'm curious about the Kylie.
Well, I've got
my
you.
Job is to exactly. I've always wondered, actually.
Yeah. Just quickly.
Yeah. But I've borrowed that phrase so often, morbid curiosity. It's the annoying thing about Woody Allen, he's fucking talented, and morbid curiosity is a great bit of language.
It's great, man. Yeah. This is the thing, he's a very talented man.
Yeah. A morbid curiosity. Yeah. I've used that so many times. When people accuse me of all sorts of things, of course.
Oh, blimey. I'll look forward to that coming out.
Just to clarify, I can experience empathy, and I've never done anything wrong in my life.
I was going to say, we're talking about no emotions, and then you start.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't even surprise me.
Yeah. Well, of course, yeah. Why not?
Of course he was abusing everybody.
Yeah,
he didn't
why
give a
not?
Fuck.
Something to do in it.
Yeah. While I'm here, hey, I better stop making excuses and stuff.
Yeah.
Some child abuse.
Oh, God.
I recently watched that. I watched the Michael Jackson, or bit of the Michael Jackson thing. And, yeah, I have to say, I was a bit... Because there's a guy called Razor Fist that debunks the whole thing. And he's got all this, razor
think
fist.
About the words he just said.
I know.
There's a
as
guy.
I said it, and I'm like, but again, I was in the middle of the sentence. I'm like, I have to say it now.
There's a guy called Razor Fist who debunks the whole thing.
Oh, my God.
You know who I'd want fighting
point?
My corner?
Yeah.
You know, if I'm accused of something, if I want someone to prove that I didn't do it, they better be called Razor Fist, or I've got no chance.
Oh, man. I know. As I got into it, I'm like, oh, God. It
wasn't in the documentary, was it, Razor Fist?
No. He's a guy on YouTube. And he goes back.
Oh, and he's on YouTube. That's good.
He's on YouTube.
Yeah, they're always level-headed people, serious, aren't they? Those debunkers on YouTube.
Oh, my God. This is like talking to my grandparents. Are you on the old YouTubes?
God, and he debunks it.
But he was going back over all the other court cases that have been, and he was going, well, you know, they tried this in 19, wherever it was, and then this evidence and that evidence, and he shows all the paperwork and this and that, and then the old interviews, and I saw that before I saw the documentary. So I was like, there you go, they're idiots, they're clearly just trying it on for money. Then you watch the documentary and you go, holy shit, no, I think he probably did it. Or something happened, and you're like, oh, God, but... Now what do we do?
Well, the Woody Allen stuff is like, I mean, people always go, well, he's been acquitted three times, like he's been to court this many times and he's been found innocent every time. Yeah. You go, but that's just because we wanted to believe that he didn't because he married Annie Hall. but then that's why the pendulum has swung so much. Well, partly because of like the way these movements have made us, everyone go, oh, believe women and like listen and believe victims and stuff like that. But also because the last fucking 20 films he's made have been dog shit. We go, oh, who cares? Annie Hall was fucking ages ago, mate. Manhattan wasn't even that good. It was just black and white. And then you just go, I don't care. But I'm like, I'm there going, actually, Midnight in Paris was quite good.
I quite enjoyed Sleeper.
Yeah. I think you're forgetting he did make Blue Jasmine quite recently, and it was actually a triumph, and she did win the Oscar for it. So
wasn't Louis C.K. in that?
and
so
Andrew
we can't
Dice
watch it
Clay.
Anyway.
Andrew
Dice Clay as well.
Dice, I love Andrew Dice Clay so much. God. He's just such a fascinating man to watch in anything. He's just such a weird. Oh, he's in that show Entourage, which is also unacceptable. Have you seen Entourage?
No.
It's
seen bits of it.
It's the broiest, like, oh, it's God. The most, like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think that's what
it's not aged
it.
Well at all.
No.
But Andrew Dice Clay is amazing in it.
Mate, this has been, how are we doing for time?
Good.
Are we all right? Are we doing good?
Perfect.
This has been nice, man. Yeah. Because I like, because this is the thing, when we spoke the other day, and we were going, oh, you know, we're talking about men's mental health. And you were like, yeah, well, I want to talk about this. And it was like the other side of it.
Right,
which
was
a nice, refreshing. And now we realise you don't have any emotions.
Yeah, well, robot. That's certainly what people say.
Has it been problematic in relationships?
I don't think it's not really true. It's just my act implies that, probably.
Yeah, right.
But it's not really true. I think it actually speaks to the whole point of this podcast, is that I just hide them.
Yeah.
The whole point is I've just been disguising them all the time. But I'm not one of those people who's like, I refuse to cry in front of anyone.
No.
It's just that I often don't.
Right.
The thing I find is that, like, then you find that every time you cry, which is, I don't know, for me it's rare, every time I do, I'm like, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
This feels amazing. I love this.
Yeah.
I love that I'm crying. This is great. And the thing that is bad is the dull, numb sadness. When you just go, I just feel low and there's nothing to explain it. Because when you're crying normally as well, it's like, oh, I can see the reason I'm doing this. I'm watching the last scene of Lady Bird. I've read that Joel Golby article about his parents being dead, and now obviously I'm weeping for a year. I watched that Rob Delaney interview on Russell Howard about his child, and I will never stop crying in my life.
Yeah.
But then you go, great. It's great to feel like this.
Mate, we've talked about this on another podcast.
Yeah. But when you just like, oh, I just woke up and I feel low and I won't stop feeling like this all day.
Yeah.
Then you're just like, for fuck's sake.
It's hard, isn't it, when you get stuck like that, because you're saying to yourself, just go out.
Yeah,
or go
yeah.
and do this, or masturbate, or do something that's different, or do something to put yourself up.
Yeah.
But you don't want to do anything.
Well, I go to, this is more not really the feeling low.
Mm.
I started going to the gym. I discovered this by accident.
Right.
So I started going to the gym because I was like, I thought I'd look like shit.
Right.
And I was like, it was making me angry and sad. So I started going to the gym. And also I moved closer to one. That was the main thing.
Which is always brilliant.
Right, I always had a membership at a different one, but I never went because it was like a 25-minute walk to get there.
Mate.
And I was like, well, obviously I'm never gonna go there.
My gym was 10 minutes from my flat when I was in Greenwich, and I was there all the time.
Yeah. I now live 5 minutes walk from a gym, and I'm there constantly. And I went during the World Cup, and they would show the games on the screens, and I would just run watching the games. And it was... it was like, this is great.
Yeah.
And then it was like, also, I wasn't doing Edinburgh, so it was just like, I need to get a sense of achievement from somewhere because I'm not writing any jokes and trying anything out. And it's like a cheat code to feeling like you've done something.
Yeah.
So I did that. And then I discovered and then I started doing like other stuff, or like use machines or whatever, or like lift something.
Right.
Nothing heavy, just, you know, a bottle of water. But then I started to go being like, I was in a time where I was getting really, not anxious is the wrong word, but I was very in my head all the time because there was an important decision I had to make.
Right.
Career-wise, that I've been mulling over for ages, like, do I do this or not? And I couldn't stop thinking about it, and I couldn't decide. I just physically couldn't decide. Every time I came for the points for yes, I then came up with loads for no, and they were all accurate. And anyone I spoke to was like, "Yeah, everything you're saying is true," on each side. So like, no one was really any help.
No.
And I was like, got really in my head about it. And then what I realised accidentally from just being at the gym, which originally was because I was. For aesthetic reasons, I realise, when I'm here, I can't think about anything else other than counting. Because I'm just counting reps or whatever.
Right, yeah.
I can't think about that when I'm here because you're already listening to a podcast and then you're counting, then that's already too many things. So I was just like...
That's so true.
So it wasn't until... But what would happen is I would just get that like hour or whatever where I would just be like, that hasn't entered my mind. And then it wouldn't be until it wears off like half an hour later when I'd get home where I would go... Oh, right, back to thinking about this again.
Right.
But it was worth it to have that. And it's a positive thing anyway.
Yeah.
What I would say, though, is, you know, the whole thing of, like, people are just like, look, if you want to change your life, just, like, go to the gym and eat well and you'll just feel great. I literally feel worse than I've ever felt in my life. I eat so well at the moment. I go to the gym all the time. And I feel so tired and shit all the time. I feel worse than I did before when I just ate pizza and burgers. I feel much worse. And I'm unhappy.
There's no hope for you.
Yeah, I'm done. It's fucked. But
do you not feel a sense of, even though you might feel shit, you don't
only still, in health sense. I mean, I definitely am healthier.
Yeah, but it's still a positivity like, to not to know mentally, that, to know it's, that it's not.
It's so yeah, aesthetically yeah. it's better, and mentally it's so yeah. much better
because you're like, I feel shit, but it's not because of the shit I'm eating.
Yeah, it's made me better at writing as well because then it's like an hour less that you can't write, so you suddenly use the other time better. So true. Like, if I'm suddenly like, I'm. You know, we were doing that new material gig the other night, and I went to the gym in the day, and then I was like, right, that means I have to write between these hours, and I have to do it. I can't just sit there, because otherwise this is going to be a whole waste of an evening. So it's just made everything, it made everything better, just adding a thing.
Yes.
I think I need to add another thing now, because I'm like, I'm used to it now.
Yeah.
And now I've gotten this thing where I know all my rhythms, and like, I know what to do. So I don't even really need to count that much. So I'm now just going, fuck, do another thing. I need to get into
it. You need effort.
Yeah.
This is the theme for your whole life.
Something.
Is that...
Maybe I'll get into gambling or
something. I know you're listening to podcasts and stuff, but when you're running, you come into a sort of hypnotic state. Do you find it's useful for thinking of ideas?
No.
Thinking
so,
of material?
No, so I don't. So that's an interesting thing is I went the other day, I was, there's a reservoir.
Right.
This isn't one of my short stories from when I was a kid. There's a reservoir about an hour's walk from where I live. That I used to live with another comedian, Adam Hess.
Yes.
And he found it just like on Google Maps and went there once. But he runs, he's like Forrest Gump. So like he'll go for a run, he'll sprint all of it and he'll run for an hour.
Wow.
And then he'll stop running and he won't be out of breath. I mean, he's a fucking weirdo.
What?
Yeah. So like we used to go to the gym together and then he would go on a treadmill next to me. And every time he gets a bit, so he put it on like 14 kilometers an hour and be running. Every time he gets a bit tired, he turns it up. Instead of, because he says, no, it's just psychological, you just need to press something.
That's mental.
Which is mental.
Yeah.
That isn't true. It's like, no, it's not, your legs are tired.
Yeah.
It's not psychological, you fucking idiot. But what he would do is he'd just turn it up, and then by the end, he'd be running so fast, then he'd go back down to the original one, then it feels like you're walking.
Right.
And that is true, but still, it's
just
like,
there's another.
Anyway, he just like ran once at his reservoir, and was like, oh, it's pretty cool. And then months later, I was just like trying to do some writing, and for the last couple of months, I've been sort of hammering it and working really hard and getting my shit together and just like really trying and being really efficient. And then I was just like, fucking chill out. Because it's got to a point where it's like, I've started going a bit mad with it.
Yeah.
Where I've been looking at it for too long and I'm just like, I can't fucking keep poking these ideas. Just wait.
Yeah.
So I was just trying to do this writing. I knew I had to leave the house at 6. And I was just like, I can't do it. You know when you're just trying to do it and you can't even start?
Yes.
You're just looking at something, you're looking at a page or you're looking at a laptop, God. You're just going, I literally all can't even begin. It's not that I'm trying and I'm not coming up with anything.
Yeah.
I can't open the document, I can't do it. And then I went, well, I can either sit here and try and do it and fail all day, leave the house at 6 and then just be like, what a fucking point, or I can walk to that fucking reservoir. And then I thought to myself, and I might even, because I'm walking to this reservoir, I'll listen to some music, I won't listen to a podcast. And then because I'm walking and I'm just alone and stuff like that, or maybe I'll think of some stuff. But I was like, no pressure on yourself. Mm. Don't feel like you're doing it for that purpose. Just see if it happens. And it absolutely did not happen. So I know that's a long-winded way of saying that. I realised for me to write, I have to be sat there. I have to sit there.
Really?
I'm not even one of those people who can like, you know, things will come to me.
Yeah.
But I'm not even one of those people who can just be like, well, I've just been thinking about it all day and now I've gone on stage and said it exactly how I wanted to. It's like, no. I have to sit down, I have to write it, and then I have to fucking learn it. Like,
wow.
Not word for word, but I have to go, like, what's the point you're trying to make? And then get it in my head so that I can go on stage with it. I fucking sit there.
I always have to do something else. I can't do that. I can't sit and do that. Or what I do, like the other night, I wasn't supposed to be on at the old road.
I'd gone to
the comedy store because they were doing a charity night and I knew the people. And then Tiff was on and she just went, well, do you want to come to the old road?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes. And then I went and I'm like, right. Do new stuff in my head. I'm like, because I had a couple of vague ideas. I'm like, right, just go and do it. Fling yourself like you said earlier.
I've done that in the past, but I just find it never. I don't get anything out of it.
Well, this is the thing. When I started doing it the other night, and I'm like, oh well, yeah, I've been doing this a long time. I'll just get by on my personality. But they were sort of, there was nothing coming off them at all.
Initially, they were flat crowd. Yeah.
And then I was like, oh shit, I can't even rely on personality, they're just gonna stare at me. Ah, oh, God. And I shat myself and just kept pushing and kept pushing and got some laughs and then chucked out a couple of old bits that I know work and it just, I got through it.
Yeah.
But on the way back, I felt a sense of achievement.
Well, imagine how I felt when I went on and had the exact same reaction from the audience, having written all of it. Having sat there and fucking gone, you know what, that's good. Then gone on stage and done the exact same thing.
And then they
gone
just like, went,
yeah. They were like that all night, though, for everyone. It was like, they were just like, you know.
Sometimes it goes like that, doesn't it? I mean, but there was no animosity from them.
No, no,
they,
no.
They were enjoying it. Yeah. They just weren't very vocal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, because Tiff was busting her ass to get them going. And yeah, it's sometimes, it's weird how our entire room of people that don't know each other lock into it.
All agree.
Yeah, they go.
No one here is funny.
We're not going
to
laugh at anything.
To be honest, everyone did. It was like, it was the level of a New Material gig where like, sometimes you do old rope specifically and New Material gigs where it's too good and then you get a bit complacent with a new bit and you don't edit it.
Yeah.
And sometimes you do it where it's so bad that you just think, I'll never ever say that again, which is not what you should do either.
No,
but
no.
That was like the level where you go, there's just enough encouragement in these ideas that I will actually try next time.
Mate, but this has been great. I've enjoyed this. Been all right, hasn't it, Paul?
It's been great.
Anything you want to ask, Paul? Because I know you have some, sometimes I forget to ask things or there's something that...
No, I don't think you covered that.
I've listened to some of these back, and sometimes you'll chip in with a question, and I go, oh, shit, yeah, I should have asked that. Because like I say, I'm not Paxman, I just come up, I want to have a chat, and then...
How was your life?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
how's your life been? That's the question.
How's your life?
How's your life been?
How's your mum? She all right?
She's absolutely fine,
she's
I think.
Fine. You think?
She texted me last night about some Hall & Oates tickets.
She's got good taste then.
She was, me and my brother bought her Hall & Oates tickets for Christmas and she just texted me. It's not the gig's at the end of April.
Right.
When will this podcast go out? That is a month away. And she suddenly said, I've suddenly realised I don't have those tickets. Am I supposed to have those tickets? Or are they coming to you? And I was like, it's in a fucking month. Just chill out. It was like 11 p.m.
Yeah. Like, she just said this moment.
Yeah. It was like you're woken up in a cold sweat going, oh my God, the Hall & Oates tickets. But
well, you know, the same, I mean, you were in problems. You were having, you know, your kidneys were hanging out.
Yeah.
Didn't get in the way of James Taylor.
My mum yeah, exactly. My mum was just going, you know what, I need to stop making excuses and figure out where these tickets are.
Enough is enough.
Yeah.
I've been to the gym.
I walked to a reservoir. Yeah. Nothing.
I need to deal with these problems.
Yeah.
Reese, for the love of God, where are these tickets? Oh, God. But it's been all right, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been great.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah.
Thank you, Reese. Pleasure, man. Absolute pleasure.
What a treat.
And what we'll do, if you want, we'll send you a copy of it when it gets edited. Paul does the editing.
You can just have it.
I like, yes, because Simon Evans said to me, I said to him, I said, do you want to listen to it? And he went, nah, publishing be damned.
Let's just
get it out.
That podcast's mad, because one, it's far too detailed on economics from...
All right, we're well off it. Well, that's why I said at the beginning, it was mad.
Like, there was a moment where he was just saying, I was saying this to you the other day, when he's like, so let's say the average household, if you're taking two average wages of 25 grand and say 35 grand, and the average household is on, and he was just like doing all this, and divided by 12, because that's the amount of months
that was
in
it. That was
and he was just going through all of this stuff, and you're just there and like going, yeah.
But he was going, yeah, so that's what, that would be, well, that would be 56 billion. And I'm like,
yeah.
I wasn't even close.
Mate, I stopped listening immediately. But it was one of those ones where he started doing this sum, and it was a bit where I was on the tube, and the tube got really loud, and I didn't rewind.
No, it was quite
quite, yeah. It suddenly I could hear it again, and it was the end of the sum, and I was like, I don't need to know.
You don't need to know.
I love Simon Evans, but when he was, he got so detailed about economics.
But he's
like,
all, that's
oh,
his
it's his whole
thing.
Brand. Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Thanks, oh, great mate. Stuff.
Insane in the membrane.
So there we are, Reese James. I told you, didn't I? A very confident young man, very funny. He really showed me a thing or two. Bloody kids. If you've suffered any of the symptoms discussed in this podcast, then visit anxietyuk.org.uk for more information, help and support. And everything will be there for you. So get on to that. Next time, I have a chinwag with Jen Brister.
There is a fear about gay parenting, because being gay is all about sex.
Yeah.
It's so, and also, because you're gay, you're already a deviant, because you're deviating from whatever the norm is. And on top of that, your sex life is weird and different. And I don't want my kids to know about your sex life. And it's like, well, why?
Yeah.
I mean, do you think I'm genuinely having that conversation with my children? I'm like, oh, kids, come over here, we'll have a chat with mum about, yeah, look, listen, if you want to know why mum and I have got short nails, here's why. You know, like, we're not having that conversation with our children. Man.
Thanks to Comedy Central for the venue, Zen Ongaku for the music, and Jade Adams once again for the inspiration. My producer, as always, is Mr. Paul Daniels at darkhorsedigital.co.uk, and I've been Rich Wilson. Till next time. Ta-da!
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.